Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Host Akiko Katayama, food writer and director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I'll try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Tadashi Ono, who is the chef co-owner of Gansoyaki near Buckley Center in Brooklyn, and co-author of three books, Japanese Hot Pots, Comforting Warm Pot Meals, and a Japanese Grill, from classic yakitori to steak, seafood, and vegetables, and Japanese soul cooking, ramen, tonkatsu, tempura, and more from the streets and the kitchens of Tokyo and beyond. Hello and welcome to the show.
Hi, Akiko. Thank you for having me.
So, let's talk about your unique background.
Right.
You're known as a Japanese cuisine chef, but you actually used to be a very successful French chef. And
right.
you worked at the legendary French restaurant in Midtown called the La Cavelle.
Yes.
And which opened in 1960 and closed in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And when you worked there as an executive chef between 1919 and 1995,
right.
You earned 3 stars from the New York Times
right.
twice.
Yes.
Which is amazing.
Oh,
and
thank you.
that was, you know, that time nobody would have believed that a Japanese person could cook great fine dining French food. So how did you start cooking French food?
Well, I was, you know, living in California, and I wanted to know more about Western style of cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since I was cooking Japanese food for a long time, but I wanted to know what is the local people eat.
Okay. So
then Western style of cooking is more... French cooking is the background of it, so I decided to move into French food.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's go back. So, but
right.
you are born and raised in Japan.
Yes.
And then you were interested in French cooking when you...
Not really.
Okay.
I was interested in food. Mm-hmm. I love to eat, you know, mm-hmm. but mainly Japanese. But we grew up with... food that got influenced by Western style cooking, mm-hmm. which is called yoshoku,
right.
like steak, hamburger, you know, or macaroni, gratin
right.
type of thing. So I wasn't really, you know, no stranger for that
okay.
or that kind of food. But,
right. And then, yeah. but you wanted to be a chef, and then you trained in Japan as a
yes,
chef.
I. wasn't sure if I wanted to be a chef, but I was start to work since I left the school. Then restaurant was the one of a place.
Mm-hmm.
Then you know I get into I start as a dishwasher, you know, busboy and all that stuff. But I, you
at
know,
a Japanese restaurant.
Yeah, in Japanese restaurant, and you know they tell me to do peeling vegetable, you know, cutting this,
yeah.
you know, clean that, and. Got into cooking very much after that.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're hands-on and trained in the kitchen.
Right.
Right. And then,
yeah.
but you moved to LA.
Yes.
How come?
Well, I wanted to explore the world a little bit. I was young. I was 20 when I moved to mm-hmm. LA. Then, you know, I grew up with much of American culture.
Mm-hmm.
In Tokyo, so I wanted to see what is this country like.
Like right? American Hollywood movies, that kind of culture.
Yeah, exactly. You know, these, you know, things that, you know. So I had a friend who has an office in LA. Mm-hmm. It was export-import company, so he, you know, he wanted to use me as an assistant, so mm-hmm. I came here. It was nothing to do with cooking.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but, you know, I came here, then I wanted to stay here, but he can't afford to, you know, use me anymore, so I had to start to look for a job. Mm-hmm. So I went to a Japanese restaurant and, you know, start to work for them.
Was it the Le Petit Chaya?
No, that was way after.
Okay. Know?
Yes.
Right. So, yeah. So it sounds like you just really started hands-on, training right. yourself in the kitchen, and then... Japanese
right. Of course, I learned from people you know who work with. Mm-hmm. They're a pretty good teacher too, and I could see you know a lot of good things mm-hmm. in the kitchen. So you know, yeah. So that's right. how I learned. Yeah.
You know the I just mentioned the La Petite Chaya, which yes. is a very well known French Japanese crossover restaurant.
Yes, it's right. closed now, but it was a. You know, pioneer of French Japanese cooking or mm-hmm. California style cooking
okay.
in LA, mm. and which was very interesting, you know, fusion restaurant. I don't like to use fusion, but it was very good blend of cooking, you know, with French technique with Japanese ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was quite good right. experience that I had there.
And so you probably learned some French techniques there.
Yes.
And eventually you worked at another legendary L'Orangerie.
Yes.
That's a fine dining restaurant.
Yes, they have a restaurant in Paris
mm-hmm.
and they have a restaurant in Tokyo too.
Mm.
So, they did. By the time I was working there, I don't know about now, but the older worker there was a French people.
Mm.
And, you know, I don't speak any French. I don't, you know, know what's the name of the ingredients, but, you know, I start to learn a little bit here and there.
Right.
And, yeah, you know, I really enjoyed the way they were approaching to the food and, you know, the attitude and, you know, craftsmanship and everything. So, very good experience I had there.
Right. Yeah. So, basic techniques of French you learned there. And
yes.
And then you said you wanted to go to New York to
right.
learn more.
Right. But the chef at the L'Orangerie used to work with people in people from New York.
Mm-hmm.
Then he wrote me a letter to go see this person. Then mm-hmm. I went to New York.
Wow.
Which is La Caravelle.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Michael Romano. He
okay.
was a chef there.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time I went there, he was already left. And he started to work for Union Square Cafe. Then
mm-hmm.
He had a 2 months of a break in between, so I couldn't find this person. But
mm-hmm.
Luckily, this La Caravelle needed the people.
Mm-hmm.
So they hired me as a line cook.
Mm-hmm.
I just took a job. Yeah.
Ah, so just the line cook and then...
Yes.
But how did you become the executive chef then?
Well, they are having, you know, one main chef left, the others, you know, then they hire some other chef too. I was working as a sous chef kind of thing, so it was line cook, but it didn't work with this new chef
mm-hmm.
who hired. So I was talking to the owner
mm-hmm.
and then... see if they can use me as a test
mm-hmm.
to be a chef there. So they were, luckily they, you know, trusted me and used me as a chef. There's no announcement or anything, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's a big restaurant. So, but they, you know, it started to work out okay. So this Japanese chef can cook.
Wow.
That's what they said. So, okay.
That's well, magical.
Let's do it. Yeah. No,
it must be.
Yeah, well, of course, I had a lot of help from, you know, these owners, other cooks,
mm-hmm.
you know, other people. But, yeah, it turns out to be a good thing.
Wow.
Yes.
I think everything works like that in anything in my life, too.
Yeah, well, I was kind of ignorant, too. You know, it's like to be a chef of such institution,
mm-hmm.
this
mm-hmm.
restaurant, it's a big deal for the you know this, you know, environment, right?
Right. So probably the experience at the L'Orangerie was kind of the basis for that formal fine dining.
It definitely helped, but it's more that I was working as a line cook at La Caravelle. Really, it gets me to know what the basic French cooking is.
Okay.
Like, it's more classical style that, you know,
right.
like pot-au-feu, you know, cassoulet, you know, bouillabaisse type of thing.
Right.
I get to cook the very basic French cooking. So that was really good experience.
Right.
Yes.
And as an executive chef, did you throw in some Japanese flavors in the dishes?
Yeah, I tried it. Some succeed, some were not. But it's funny thing that I start to use yuzu, right? As it's a Japanese citrus. We put it on the menu. It's a marinated fruit with yuzu. And people say, "Whoa, what is it? What is the yuzu?" they never touch. They never order.
Oh,
so
wow.
we decide to put the citrus, whatever, right? Citrus sauce. And they tasted. They really liked it. So you know, it went on to the menu. So yeah, it was
interesting.
Good. Yeah, interesting thing. Yeah, you know, I tried to use wasabi, shiso, you know, kind of thing. Yeah, sancho.
Right. That was the time you started to see those words, which, you know, shiso, wasabi, yuzu, they're everywhere in Western restaurants in New York right now, but that's the beginning.
Maybe yeah, with one or few of them.
Right.
Yeah, a few, yeah.
So after you left La Caravelle to open a restaurant, that's a Sono
in
Midtown, that was 1999?
Yes.
So what was the reason that you decided to open a...
Yeah, like I wanted to explore more the knowledge and the technique I had through that I worked at in a Japanese restaurant before. So somehow if I can combine these two, you know, great cuisine and culture together, you know, that could be something interesting to do. So, yeah, that's why I wanted, you know, I wanted to open the restaurant.
Yeah, now I was looking back at the menu you served. One of them is a roasted duck breast with its French-style confit black and buckwheat spatel. And... wasabi watercress sauce. So sounds like it's more like a French technique base and lots of Japanese ingredients.
Yes, that's the base, yes. It's based, it's a French food with a Japanese, a lot of Japanese ingredients.
Right.
Yeah.
And after that, you the chef at the Matsuri restaurant in 2003, that was a big, beautiful restaurant in Maritime Hotel in the Meatpacking District.
Yes.
And you were there for 9 years and serving, you know, little fancier Japanese, but more Japanese food.
Yes, more. Yeah, it's a Japanese restaurant. Has a sushi, you know, sashimi, and you know, tempura, teriyaki kind of thing.
Right.
It's very basic, but it's more upscale restaurant. And
so, what's the reason that you decided to focus more on Japanese?
I was, you know, I'm going back to my root, I guess. But you know, I learned a lot of. You know, technique and ingredients of Western or French cooking, right? I was start to think a little bit. It's a great cuisine. It's no doubt about it. You know, I had a really good experience and everything. But I start to think it's just for my taste or for it's a little bit too overdo things. So you know. Why you have to put this and more this and all that stuff? So, yeah, that was always in my mind when I was cooking those foods. So if I can simplify the recipe or dishes, that would be a better. It's more about ingredients rather than technique.
Okay.
So that was Japanese food. So, you know, naturally went back to the area that I guess I knew how to cook a little bit Japanese. So
right. It says that if you compare French and Japanese cuisines, the French is addition and Japanese is subtraction. So
yeah, something like that.
Right,
yeah.
Like because French has flavors to ingredients and Japanese people tend to minimize, reduce, try to get the flavors and ingredients out. So
yeah, I think so too. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, and then last year, you joined Harris Salat.
Yes.
Who is the owner of the popular ramen shop called Ganso Ramen in Brooklyn, to form a new company called the Ganso Group.
Yes.
And you became the culinary director of the company. So how did it happen?
Well, Harris and then I know each other for a long time, and he, you know, he interviewed me once when he was writing about some kind of izakaya.
Yeah, Harris is also, originally he's a writer.
He's a writer, yeah. I guess that was for New York Times or something. Then, you know, we talk a lot and we, you know, like each other, you know, the share, you know, same, you know, value and all that. So, you know, we invited him at my home, and you know, I go out with him. Then you know, we decide to write a book together, right? So we wrote a 3-book together.
But I think he, you know, I know Harris too, and then he said, "I'm training myself at the Tadashi's kitchen."
Oh yeah, right. Like, he was studying for like a year.
Okay.
Yeah, cleaning fish and everything.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
He, so. Yeah, you know, I don't know if he had a good experience, but he was there. I mean, he worked hard, and he, you know, was, I'm sure it's pretty hard for him at some point, but we had fun.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds like it's a natural, you know, combination two of you, because you share the same kitchen and you work together.
Right.
And then you wrote the same cookbook, like three of them.
Yes.
So that's
It's been working out pretty good.
Nice. So, and then you opened the Ganso Yaki in your Buckley Center in Brooklyn in March this year with Harris. So what is the concept of Ganso Yaki?
It's a casual Japanese restaurant, serves Japanese comfort food in a very casual and fun environment.
Right, but you know, compared to Matsuri, it's much less fancy, and then
much fancy.
Why did you decide to just go for this comfort food?
Well, I wanted to introduce this more, you know, the Japanese food rather than sushi and tempura type, right? So it's, for instance, there's a lot of great food coming up from street of Japan, like cart or like a stand, like, you know, the yakitori or whole-grilled squid or like okonomiyaki, you know, all type of thing. And it hasn't been very popular here yet, so we'd like to just introduce more this, you know, casual, you know, heartwarming, you know, comfort, like soul food type of thing.
Yeah, those food, that reminds me, for instance, my childhood, there was summer festivals and there's, you know, street vendors.
Wasn't it fun?
Yeah.
I love to go to this festival, you know, on the street there's a lot of cart, they're cooking all kind of things.
Lots of taste memories.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. And, you know, but in a way, you completely got rid of your French cooking mindset or technique when you...
I don't think I can. I think it's in me. But, you know, if I don't have to, that's okay too.
But still, the attitude is to subtract rather than adding sauces.
Well, for instance, okonomiyaki is a lot of sauces. You know, it's like, you put mayonnaise, and you put, you know, okonomiyaki sauce, which is like brown, kind of demi-glace type of sauce. And it's definitely more, requires technique. Right? If we cook it in a little cassuela, cassoulet, and, you know, it's very flavorful, bold, tasty. So it's not really like traditional Japanese food, but it's fun doing it. That's what we eat in Japan. So,
right. And I think it's there's always, almost always, a lot of vegetables.
Right.
Pretty simple but nutritious. Right. Casual comfort food. So, all right. I think now we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about what you can eat at the Gansoyaki and the Japanese Western influenced food. So please stay with us.
And this one's called Meeting at the Docks by Rectech.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Tadashi Ono, the chef, co-owner of Gansoyaki and Ganso Ramen in Brooklyn, and also the co-author of three fun and very informative Japanese cookbooks. So we talked about the concept of Gansoyaki, which is a casual restaurant serving Japanese comfort food. And could you tell us about the menu?
Yes, we have a little vegetables section and has a hijiki, which is a Japanese black seaweed, slowly cooked with soy sauce, mirin, and dashi.
And it's like almost every family
once a week, the kind of home food, home style food. Also, we have kimpira gobo, which is a saute burdock with you know, soy sauce and sake and sugar. That's really comfort, you know, home style cooking.
Right. I mean, mostly soy sake and sugar. That's the main ingredients, right? In Japanese home cooks.
Yes, that's about it. That'll do everything. Almost. And we have tempura also, and shrimp tempura. Then we have things called kakiyage, which is made with a base scallop. It's like a fritter, you know. It's in the chunk of vegetable and the scallops, and we serve with a traditional tempura sauce, which has a dashi, soy sauce, and mirin. And other thing, we have okonomiyaki also. We talk about it.
Right. And so the you know, the menu sections, vegetable, tempura, street, and Korean handmade soba noodles, and you know, the street section is I think good naming. And not just that, it's interesting items like you know, like okonomiyaki just said, and honey cream croquet. You know, that's the, can you just you know, elaborate on these items?
Well, the it's a croquette from well, I think it's a Dutch food mainly, right? That originated in, it's a bechamel sauce with onion and crab meat, and make it into form and bread it and deep fry it. And it's a type of food called yoshoku in Japan, which is a Western style food, if you translate it directly.
Like literally.
Yeah, so,
food.
So that is the food that we also enjoy in Japan. And that's, you know, how I used to eat when I was a kid also.
But how did it happen? Like, how, you know, yoshoku was born? And do you know the history of it?
Well, I'm not a historian of the food, but I just, I heard that there's a restaurant in Ginza called Rengate. This the very pioneer of the yoshoku in Japan. And he adopted this Western style cooking, like sunitsu, you know, make it into instead of using beer, he used pork. That became tonkatsu, right? Which is very famous Japanese food now.
Like pork cutlet.
Yeah, pork cutlet. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, once since the Japan opened up the country, about you know, before it was closed for like 300 years, right?
Right.
Then the Meiji period, they opened up to the foreign country.
Yeah, then like the end of 19th century.
Right. So then all this, you know, the Western culture came in, and they influenced the food. Then one of the episode that I know and Harris found out is that we were banned for eating meat for a long time because of the Buddhism, whatever the reason.
Right.
But after that, you know, these Western people came into Japan and they saw they're so big. Because of, you know, they thought it's because of they're eating meat.
Mm.
So, okay, well, we have to eat meat to become stronger.
Okay.
Right? So, to, you know, compete with these people, right?
Right.
So, that's how they start to eat meat again. So, yeah, naturally, this culture of the food came into Japan. You know, Japanese are very good at adapting things to make it into their own stuff.
Right.
So, yeah, it became more like a Japanese Western food.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like the curry rice.
Curry rice, same thing. Curry was, you know, Navy, because of the Navy of Japan, was a study from British Navy, you know, so taught them how to build, you know, how to just organize this Navy, right? So, naturally, this culture. The Navy, British Navy, used to cook curry
from the Indian,
because of Indian, you know, people working in the ship. So that's how, you know, we learned that from too. Except we didn't have an Indian cook in our Navy ship, but, you know, Japanese cook started to learn that. These people, after they released from the Navy, they go to restaurant to introduce this food, so that's become Japanese curry. Yeah.
Right, and of course after World War II, you know, American GIs brought a lot of, you know, Western like pasta, ketchup,
spaghetti, ketchup.
Right.
What is it? Flour. A lot of flour came in after the war. Yeah. That's how okonomiyaki became famous.
Because
it became more in the West.
Basically, okonomiyaki, for listeners who've never tried it, never heard of it,
right.
What is it?
It's a savory pancake with shredded cabbage and basically using a pork belly, but you can use as a shrimp or scallop or fish, squid as a topping, and drizzle with this okonomiyaki sauce, which is like a demi-glace type of sauce, and
French
and mayonnaise, and put a little seaweed flakes,
green.
And dry bonito flakes, also.
Right? And dances, you know, flake,
yeah, because of
dancing.
The heat that this flake dances around,
and
so it's totally mixture of Japanese and Western,
right? So that's yoshoku.
Yes.
And let's go back to the okonomiyaki at Kansayaki.
Yes.
That's, which I tasted actually, and that was so good.
Oh, thank you.
So, what's your take on okonomiyaki at Kansayaki?
Well, we use a little cassoulet to cook the okonomiyaki, and we serve with it on the table. So, it keeps this pancake fluffier, because if the heat keeps this fluffy, so it doesn't go down, you know, so that's a good thing. And also we crisp the pork belly before we cook it, so it has, and pork belly was also cut a little thicker than normal, like paper thing they do in Japan, because the meat is so expensive in Japan, so yeah, we can use more meat, so it's just to make it into kind of cube and crisp it up, so it gets kind of crusty texture of this pork belly.
Right. Because the okonomiyaki in Japan, like, you know, usually there's a hot plate at the table, and the family makes, you know, the dough, you know, use a spread, then they cook together, and then they cut. But in your version, you know, the cast iron, and I think shape is almost like a cake.
Yes.
The rich flavor, and I saw that's Tadashi's you know, French background.
Oh, is that right? Maybe.
Yeah, in a good way, of course.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Yeah.
Right. So, any other dishes that you feel is a very representative?
We dish? Also have a shumai.
Okay.
Which is very popular, and shumai normally just steam. Mm-hmm. Right? It's a dumpling made with pork and a little. You know,
but this is again, it's a yoshoku, but it's this time Chinese.
It's a Chinese influence. This Chinese influence is big in Japan food. Mm. It's also after the World War II because of this Chinese, you know, people that we, you know, occupied Manchurian, right? So these people, you know, they don't want to stay there. They came to Japan with you know, Japanese soldiers. So some are good cooks, they start to open the restaurant too. That's the beginning of ramen too. In Hokkaido and in Yokohama too.
Interesting.
But you know, we have a lot of Chinese influence in our food too. So shumai and gyoza, which is like a pot sticker, is very popular, right? And what we cook shumai is like a pot sticker too. So it's a rounded, like a cylinder type of dumpling cooked in the cast iron and crisp out the one side and serve in the cast iron too. So it's pretty good actually.
Sounds like it. Right. You know, but these are great, very friendly food, approachable food.
Yes.
And the prices are reasonable, starting from $5 and everything is under $20.
Right.
So like a street food price.
Yes, we're trying to, you know, be just friendly or just, this is what it is, you know. We can't charge more than what it is, right? So, yeah, that's what we do. It's decent, you know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, but at the same time, I see your commitment to the quality equivalent to the high-end French restaurant. For instance, on the table, you provide a house-made yuzu kosho oil.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and yuzu kosho is a condiment made from chili peppers, peel of yuzu, that's a citrus, in unique Japanese citrus,
right.
And which is very fragrant, and the salt. Mm-hmm. So it gives a very unique spiciness to the dish.
Yes.
So you put it on the table.
Right.
Why do you do that?
Well, we like to introduce one of the best condiments we have in Japan. And I love yuzu kosho. And I also make it into yuzu kosho oil. So I told the people here who enjoy this, you know, flavor and, you know, accent. To the food, so just, you know, I want people to find out about it. Yeah.
Okay. And also you have a house togarashi, which is a traditional seven spice powder called shichimi.
Yes.
And you mixed with sancho. Sancho is often called the sancho pepper, but it's not pepper, it's a citrus.
Right.
So it's not spicy,
right.
But it's extremely aromatic.
Yes.
So you put it also for the same educational purposes too?
Yes, I like this aroma of sancho and also the tingle feel it gives in your mouth. It's quite interesting. And I like people to find out about it too.
So compared to, you know, hot red chili pepper, it's biting, but it disappears
right
so quickly. So that's a different kind of sensation to have with shichimi.
Well, it depends how much you eat, because the sancho, if you use a lot, it stays in your mouth for a long time. It just tingle your tongue and palate for like a while, which is I like the sensation too.
So if I feel like eating those healthy Japanese comfort food, shall I pick up one of your books?
Please.
Yeah. Okay. So you can maybe go through your book, three cookbooks. What they're about.
Great.
Yeah, so like first Japanese hot pots, comforting one pot meals. What it's about, this book is?
It's a hot pot meal, is especially in winter. It's a heartwarming, you know, comfort food for Japan. And every family in the winter, this could, do this cooking. They normally put it on the table with a burner, and you know the flavor.
Right, like portable gas.
Yeah,
and then the whole family surrounds that pot.
Right, and it's, you know, everybody contribute to the cooking.
Okay,
you know, mom put a vegetable, maybe father put the protein. Protein has more value, right? So, and all the kids put some of the thing, and we do. We call let's cook hot pot. We don't do it. We don't say. We say let's do hot pot. So it's, yeah, or let's do nabe. You know, nabe means hot pot in Japan. So just doing it means that everybody just, you know, contribute to the cooking.
Right.
So, you know, it's a good thing to say.
It's not just a
Nabe ni shiyou, do this. Nabe tabe.
Nabe ni
shiyou. You don't say nabe, let's cook nabe, right?
Right. It means something very collaborative.
Right.
And something to have fun together.
Exactly. So it's a great way to, you know, share moment with your family or friends or somebody who want to get close to, you know, it's a great way of
it's cooking. A bonding dish.
Yeah, and you know, eating same food from one pot, so it makes, you know, people around you closer, right?
Yeah, so, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how many pot dishes do you have in the book?
I think 50.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's a lot. You make a lot of friends.
I need more friends.
And the second book, The Japanese Grill,
yes.
From classic yakitori to steak, seafood, and vegetables. What is that?
Well, you know, since I moved here, I start to love this barbecue culture, you know, especially in the summer. And, you know, it's not very barbecue or grilling. It's a really professional things in Japan, right? But here, everybody, you know, not enjoys and doing it in the park or in the backyard, or, you know. So I really like this idea of doing it, and I have a little backyard that I have a grill. Like every weekend I wanted to put something on the grill, then you know, try it out, you know, new ingredients, Japanese flavoring and all that stuff. Then I, you know.
Yeah. So what's the difference between, you know, classic barbecue and Japanese style grill? And to make it
I'm using more Japanese flavoring or curing or
such,
you know, kind of technique such as miso, soy sauce, sake, mirin, you know, like yuzu kosho, you know, shichimi, togarashi type of thing. So it's the, there's endless, you know, you can just do, you know, picking up the main ingredients too, like steak, porterhouse, you know, strip loin, scarred steak, hunger steak, pork chop, you know, so it's so much fun.
You know, if you have barbecue parties every weekend throughout the summer, you can throw in some Japanese flavors.
Yes.
And then you can be very popular.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Okay, and the third book, The Japanese Soul Cooking, Ramen, Tonkatsu, Tempura, and More from the Streets and Kitchens of Tokyo and Beyond. That sounds like gansoyaki.
Yes, exactly. Thing. We're trying to do a lot of, you know, cooking or food from the book for gansoyaki. And yeah, again, we would like to introduce what is you know, more comfort from Japan and for people here. So, yeah.
Right. Probably, and as far as we talked about the menu at the gansoyaki, I think the menu, Japanese yoshoku, you know, Western-influenced food, can be even more familiar, I mean, easier for American people to cook and enjoy because it's more Western-influenced.
Possibly, it might be closer to their, you know, their heart, but their, you know, palate too. So, yeah, I'd like to really introduce this type of, you know, funky Japanese food.
And fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what is your plan now?
Well, we'd like to make this restaurant really, you know, solid. And, you know, and we'll also like to you know, expand more business mm-hmm. out of this place. And also we're planning to opening another restaurant called Ganso Nama.
Okay. Nama means raw.
Exactly. So, right. you know, low fish, mm-hmm. sushi, and mm-hmm. little Japanese-style low bar type of thing. So,
When it's going to happen?
Probably this fall.
Wow, that's quick.
Yes, yeah, we'll try. Yes.
Right, and you're going to serve traditional Japanese sushi or
yes.
something?
Yes, yeah, traditional as well as a little, you know, mm-hmm. arranged maybe.
Playful.
Yes, playful, mm-hmm. yes.
Okay, and by the way, I recall, you know, when you're at the Sono, mm-hmm. you made your own plates and bowls for
yes,
the restaurant.
Yes.
And are you still doing it?
Partly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometime here and there, but not as much as I used to do. Mm. No time, because partly requires a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And I was doing it between the job, because mm-hmm. if I have a year off like that, then I was really concentrated doing it. And it's got a lot of process to do partly. You have to dry, you have to fire it, then you glaze it, you have to... It's like 24-hour thing sometimes, so you can't just do it on the side. So
right. I mentioned it because, you know, the plates and bowls, cups, everything in Japan is very important because it's so seasonal.
Right.
And if you go to Kaiseki restaurant,
right.
and if you go to very expensive one,
right.
the whole
right.
sets of plates and bowls, everything changes seasonally,
right.
and
right.
they have a warehouse for that.
Yes, yes.
So
yes,
I thought you had some, you know, dream of having your...
Well, what I make is very earthy, very elastic. Mm-hmm. Not the defined work, mm-hmm. which I can't do it. But so you know, it's fun thinking about what goes on. You know, this plate that you make, right? Or you think about food and what kind of plate is going well with this food. You know, it's more on your cooking is part of some kind of environment, right? In the cultures. So,
right.
yeah, it's really fun thinking about, you know, food with what goes on. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, well, thank you for joining us today, Tadashi, and good luck with other interesting new projects.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh.
So, listeners, if you'd like to know more about Tadashi's restaurant, please visit gansonyc.com. That's GANSONYC.com. And if you'd like to know, if you have any questions or comments, please contact us at heritageradionetwork.org. And you can also reach me at kikokatayama.com. Japan Eats is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org. So I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.